Connect.
Well, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you, sitting in for Steve Ryman. He'll be back with you tomorrow and Friday. But it's my pleasure to welcome in Abenicio Baldonado and Vincent Torres. Now, the reason I'm saying your whole names, gentlemen, is because I personally believe that Hispanic names have the coolest rhythm to them. And all I can hear in my mind right now is Abenicio Baldonado for three.
I love it.
You got to be a three-point shooter.
I am a three-point shooter. How'd you
know? Are you?
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah, I used to get in trouble a lot for shooting those three-pointers.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Now they love you.
Yeah.
I mean, they
Steph
just...
Steph Curry changed the game.
They just jack it. Shooters. They just come down. Vince, were you a three-point shooter?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. See, you guys are both guards. So I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
How much do you think big guys touch the ball now that you guys have taken over from the three-point line?
Probably not that much.
I know.
Sorry.
The lobby. Hey, everybody, I'm so glad to have these two gentlemen in the studio today. They have both been involved in the political process in New Mexico for a very long time. Abe, he hosts the Chili Wire podcast, and he's involved as, you know, working in politics, everything from lobbying, worked for Imoga a little bit. They're an energy think tank kind of operation. Vince, of course, former, he was with the Senate Republicans for a number of years, and I know that he's been on our show many, many times. He's also an assistant pastor at Blaze Church in Santa Fe, and wow, I haven't been up there for a while, but your worship and everything up there is rocking.
It's awesome. Yeah,
I love it.
Shout out to all the Blaze people who are tuning in.
Yeah, church doing well?
It's going very well.
Yeah.
Very well.
I love it. Well, also, and I should mention this because a lot of our listeners support Feed New Mexico Kids. Church up there is feeding a couple of schools now.
Yeah.
And has taken on as a project. What a neat deal. Well, let's get right into today. We're going to discuss New Mexico's elections and what voters should ask of the people seeking to represent them. Through this hour, we'll emphasize learning about the entire ballot and making a plan to vote. And I'm going to start with Abe. Yeah. Abe, what political and social concerns are you hearing most often from New Mexicans?
Yeah, crime definitely is one, Jim. And I think it's one of those issues where you don't have to be blind to see it, you know, not see it. You know, it's happening all around us here in Albuquerque. But it's even spreading out beyond Albuquerque. You know, we used to hear Democratic lawmakers like Senator Joseph Cervantes say this is an Albuquerque problem. And now it's actually spread to be a Santa Fe problem. It's a Las Cruces problem now. So there's a lot of issues happening. Crime is one of them, certainly, for the central Rio Grande area of New Mexico. Education, you know, we constantly hear that we're dead last in just about everything in education and we're first in everything bad. And that's problematic. And I think a lot of families, to their credit, believe when they drop off their children at school that they're getting the best education. And unfortunately, test results have shown that isn't the case. And so we really need to look at putting in some accountability measures back into our public schools to ensure that, you know, with the millions and billions of dollars that are invested each year in New Mexico, that we're seeing some sort of return on investment. But even now, we're also hearing about affordability. So how are we making life easier for New Mexicans? And, you know, what policies can we put in place? We saw one, you know, one issue was, you know, we saw the no tax on tips from the One Big Beautiful Bill. I believe that's a great piece. I think we're going to see the return on investment in that this next tax filing season. So hopefully those folks who make those tips will see a little bit more money back in their pockets.
So, Abe, you've mentioned a bunch of outside organizations like... Wallet Hub, they come in and they say New Mexico's last in, you know, this and that. You have Kids Count saying that we're last in education in the country. You've brought up some of these things that, that people outside of New Mexico comparing us to other states. It's legitimate that New Mexico has to compete with all other 50 states for business and for people to move here and all of that, right?
Absolutely.
But here's the thing I don't understand. And I'm addressing this to both of you. Why are voters not educating themselves about this? Because these are major problems and have been for 90 years. And we've got to make changes.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim and Vince. If you don't mind, I'll jump in here. But I'm going to hot take, but I think politicians have failed New Mexico and New Mexicans. I think a lot of times when you look at statesmen and women, there's a duty there to educate your constituents, because obviously we don't know everything happening. We see a lot of posturing. And unfortunately, in our state, we see that from the Democratic Party, where, you know, they're not telling the full truth and they're not educating their citizens on issues. You know, and context matters. And Jim, I think that's one of the big issues, is that we see that New Mexicans are not getting the full context of the policy implementation that we're seeing in New Mexico. So when we have paid family medical leave, they're only getting one side of the story. We're not hearing both sides of the story. Okay, well, hey, here are the pros, but yeah, guess what? The consequences outweigh those pros.
Well, as you're talking about this, we only hear a lot of that's coming from the media. And so, Vince, I'm going to go to you now and talk to you a little bit about traditional media. Kind of is a dinosaur now. You can't tell what's true. You're innovating a new technology through a newswire called The Sentinel. Let's talk a little bit about that. And then I want to talk to you about Deb Haaland. And I want to talk to you about Greg Hull a little bit as we get into the governor's race.
Yeah, I think you bring up a very valid point about the lack of dependency that we have on legacy media, as I'll call it. I think more and more folks are looking to alternative platforms and resources to get the news, with an understanding that there's not the coverage, or the coverage that they are receiving is angled a certain way. And so the New Mexico Sentinel was birthed out of that, out of a desire to have a reliable, locally run resource that takes into account all perspectives, but more than anything, just gets back to reporting the facts. And to your point, Jim, I think we are long past the Walter Cronkite days, where the mainstream media just reported the news and allowed us to reach our own conclusions on the basis of the facts that we were hearing. And so the New Mexico Sentinel is locally run. It's locally operated. And what we are doing is taking in as much local information as we can to hopefully educate exactly what we were talking about a little bit earlier, to educate voters on what's happening here in New Mexico, because too many times we get distracted with what's happening in Washington, D.C., what the political pundits on the TV are saying, and we're not finding out exactly what's happening in New Mexico state government and how some of the federal decisions that are being made in Washington, D.C. actually impact us. So I would encourage your listeners to check it out, nmsentinel.com. We're just getting started, but we hope to build out a very valuable and reputable site where folks can find out exactly how the decisions that are being made in Santa Fe and Washington, D.C. are impacting them and their families.
Well, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but the papers, for example, the Albuquerque Journal, I used to enjoy reading the Journal, but the Journal isn't 30% of what it used to be. They don't have really what I would call investigative reporting. They have a central bias, it seems to me, and they don't give a well-rounded view of both sides. And let's talk about those sides. In the governor's race between Deb Haaland and Greg Hull, where do their approaches to their policies on public safety, education, affordability, and management of state agencies, where do those really differ? Where do you see the separation?
I think the differences are vast, and I think we're learning that the more and more that we hear from the campaigns as they get a little bit more specific in their platform. And I think that's one of the questions that a lot of politicians always get from folks who want to be more informed, is let's move past the political talking points. Let's move past the sound bites. What are your practical solutions for improving these areas in our state? And everything I've heard so far from the Haaland campaign would lead me to believe that we're looking at basically a maintenance of the status quo here in New Mexico. There's been nothing groundbreaking that would indicate to me that she would deviate from this current administration and how they've handled crime, how they've handled education. So I just think we're headed for more of the same with a Haaland administration. On the other hand, I think with former mayor of Rio Rancho, Greg Hull, he has dropped some particularly interesting ideas out there that I think have the potential to truly transform New Mexico. One of them being he has proposed eliminating the personal income tax. Abe mentioned earlier, you know, many New Mexicans are receiving more this tax year than they've ever received before, thanks to the federal bill that no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, Social Security, higher child tax credit, higher standard deduction. But all that to say, I think here in New Mexico, we still have a system that still taxes all of those things. So removing the personal income tax
would be a significant way to put more money back in the pockets of New Mexicans. And I think that's something that we should definitely be looking at. And the mayor obviously has a situation, having run one of the most successful cities, if not one of the most successful cities in New Mexico, to look back on that experience and demonstrate that we can do great things here in New Mexico. We can build safe, prospering communities, but they require us to think outside the box a little bit and to have the political fortitude to make the tough decisions and deviate from what we've been doing, which clearly just hasn't been delivering as they've told us it would.
I'm going to put Abe on the spot here about a couple points that you just made, Vince. You used an interesting choice of words, what we hear from the Holland campaign, but you didn't say what we've heard from Deb Holland. Now, I find that very important, because when you talk about Greg Hull, you're talking about what comes out of Greg Hull's mouth, what he actually understands, his breadth of experience. But you don't, Abe, hear that from Deb Holland. Should that be a concern to us?
It absolutely should, Jim. People should be asking, where is the person that wants to be governor of New Mexico? You know, we need her present. You need to hear from her directly. You don't need to hear from campaign aides. You don't need to hear from campaign managers, political directors. You don't need to hear from her lieutenant governor candidate. And everything that we've seen right now since Stephanie Garcia Richard was appointed by the State Central Committee is she's kind of taken the reins and the platform to be the spokesperson for Deb Holland, you know. And what we see are these clever, you know, trying to be hip videos, but there's not actually Deb Holland talking about the issues, talking about the solutions. And to Vince's point, we New Mexicans need to hear solutions, Jim. They don't need to hear ideas. No. What are your solutions to these issues? If I am concerned about education, if I'm concerned about crime, what solutions are you going to put forward for me to believe that my kid is getting the best education at their school, that my family is safe when we go to bed at night? Those are the examples that New Mexicans need. And if you're not getting that, you seriously need to question the candidate who's running for governor if she's not present and she's not answering these tough questions, because it only gets tougher. As Vince can tell you, we both worked for former Lieutenant Governor John Sanchez, and the job doesn't get easier. Once you are elected, the job actually gets harder, because now you are leading the state. And there's expectations of you as a governor, as a public official, that you need to answer for. And you can't continue ducking away from the tough questions.
What's interesting to me about both of you, and I don't know Abe as well as I know Vince, but I've been interviewing Vince for about 10 years. But I always appreciate all the work that you've done, Abe. And I especially appreciate how you both work across the aisle. Mm-hmm. You know that it takes all of us to get things done. I know that both of you have been involved in bringing back doctors to our state. You were able to be part of an influence. I know you had a great relationship with Fred Nathan at Think New Mexico, and he kind of led that charge. That's kind of a moderate left-leaning think tank. And, of course, our friend Paul Gessing, who's on our show pretty regularly here, he's a little bit more right, but he's not a MAGA guy. He's a practical solutions. Let's get this done. Let's all work together. And he and Fred are really good friends. And Vince, here's my last question of this segment. Are we asking voters, people that are listening right now, are you asking me as a voter who doesn't have anywhere near the breadth of knowledge that you two have, are you asking me to spend hours and hours researching this to get ready to vote? Or is this all pretty simple and the information is readily available?
I think it depends on how informed you want to be as a voter. Obviously, I do spend hours looking into this. I do spend hours researching candidates, finding out what votes they've taken, what their policy priorities are, communicating with them for those who are willing to have those conversations. But I think at the end of the day, for someone who may not have that time, we have more access to more information than we've ever had before. It's very, very tough at this particular point in time to be an uninformed voter. And if you are, it's because you're deliberately ignoring everything that's at your disposal. And I'm not saying get on Facebook, get on social media, and just take everything that you hear as fact. But the reality is we have more access to our politicians through the different means of communications and platforms than we've ever had before. And so I would encourage voters to take whatever step you can to become a slightly more informed voter than you were the last time, and continue that as often as you can, so that we can truly get people into office who we know are going to serve the best interests of all New Mexicans.
Vince, I so appreciate you I heard you calling out Christians. You know, the faith communities are our largest part of our audience, and I don't think they mind me acting like a coach sometimes and saying, come on, guys, we got to get out and vote. That we're going to end every one of our segments today by just encouraging you to register and get out and vote. We're not going to tell you how to vote. We're going to give you as much information as we have at our disposal. But we have three more segments with these two gentlemen, so I hope you'll stay with us. Abe Baldonado and Vince Torres with us today on ABQ Connect. We are back with Abe Baldonado and Vince Torres. They have been involved in politics in New Mexico for a lot of years in many different ways. You were chief of staff for the Senate Republicans, Vince. What did that teach you about working together across the aisle and how legislation actually gets done in New Mexico?
I was great. I really enjoyed my time working with the Republican caucus and being able to have a say, not only in some of the policy, but the strategy. I don't think many people realize just how hard it is to get something done in Santa Fe. And often the sentiment is, well, we should just do this, or why don't they just do that? Well, the reality is, whatever that is, it takes time. It takes time to develop legislation. It takes time to work with both sides of the aisle to actually get something across the finish line.
Is that relationship?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A ton of it is relationship, you know, and then once you complete the task on one side, you have to send it to the other house and they start that process all over again before it ultimately makes it to the governor for a signature or a veto. So I think one of the things that I always really enjoyed about my time with the caucus was the ability to try to find some common ground on some issues that both sides recognized needed work. You mentioned medical malpractice earlier. That was a big one for us that we had a major hand in back in 2023 and continue to have conversations about, because the problem hasn't necessarily gone away. So yes, the importance of being able to work together and develop a compelling message and to go sell it to the other side and hopefully get them on board and do something good for the people of our state.
I want you to talk about Blaze Church a little bit. You obviously have a green light to talk about politics and to encourage Christians to get involved in the voting process. Is that an important thing that pastors should do with their congregations?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll correct one thing. We don't talk about politics. We talk about the scripture. Mm. And if you are faithful to talk about the scripture, yes, the scripture will lean into every area of our politics. And so I think that's one of the kind of misnomers out there, that in order to talk about current events, you have to get very political, when the reality is, if you're just faithful to preach the word of God, you will touch on all of those issues. And one of the things I truly enjoy about Blaze Christian Fellowship under the leadership of our founding pastor, Carlos Montoya, is as he has been faithful to impress upon us the importance of just faithfully preaching God's word. As we go through books of the Bible, we touch on every cultural issue out there, and which is great, because when one of those cultural issues suddenly rises to the top and everybody's talking about it, we never feel like we suddenly have to move into that area, do a special sermon series, because we can simply say, yeah, we learned about that last year, or we learned about that in the book of Hebrews when we were studying it this year. So I think it's very, very important just to kind of make that clarification that my call has never been for the pulpit to get political. My call has always just been for the pulpit to continue proclaiming God's truth in its entirety, knowing that when you do that faithfully, it will have major political implications.
I love it. I'll say a big amen. Abe, I feel free to say this because I'm the oldest guy in the room. You're the youngest guy in the room. And tell us a little bit about you and what your career and why politics has been so important to you.
Well, Jim, like many folks, it all started with a teacher, you know, and I still remember that teacher, J.M. Lucero, who was my history teacher in high school. And I had other great teachers like Billy Matthews, who's still someone that I chat education with and I brainstorm with when we're talking ed policy and just looking at the differences in education since, you know, I was in grade school to now what we're facing currently, and just how vastly different that generations are and what education is. But going back, you know, it's educators like that. You know, one of my favorite professors in college, Elaine Rodriguez, Dr. Rodriguez.
Where'd you go to college?
New Mexico Highlands University. Ah, I'm a cowboy.
All right.
Yeah, go Highlands.
Yeah, spent a lot of time up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, grew up in Las Vegas, New Mexico, attended Robertson High School, go Cardinals.
By the way, one of the most intense rivalries on planet Earth between West and Robertson.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't care if it's band competition. That is a crazy place.
You name it, man. If there's a program in either one of those schools, they're competing. But no, healthy competition is always really good.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, it was just those educators who told me how important it was to pay attention to our history, to pay attention to government, you know, and I got very involved and I immediately knew I wanted
to. Did you do some of that student senate and those kind of things?
Yeah. In college I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. High school, not really. I was more focused on playing baseball, playing sports, you know. But definitely come college time, I got more involved on campus and, you know, started finding my voice. And, you know, believe it or not, Jim, I was shy and a little bit more quiet. I wasn't as opinionated. But, you know, again, my professor, Elaine Rodriguez, brought the best out of me, but just got really motivated. And funny enough, I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to go into corporate law. You know, I had this big plan. Instead, you know, decided not to go to law school, took a legislative internship, and that's actually where I met Vince. So, you know, divine intervention had something different planned for me, and I'm glad it did, because I would have never met Vince. We wouldn't have developed this friendship. And also just being able to work together alongside each other when we were both very young. You know, I chuckled a little bit earlier when you said that we have a long history. I never thought I would hear that said about me and Vince. We were always the young guys usually. So now sitting here saying, hey, you guys are like the old guys now with some experience behind you. And I think I've developed a few gray hairs. But look, decided not to go to law school. I ended up becoming a teacher instead, you know, a whole complete 180. But it opened my eyes, Jim, to the problems that we see in our state. You know, I inherited a 12th grade class that was reading at a sixth grade level. Those are the realities. And it opened up my eyes, you know. And growing up, I never looked at my life and my situation that I was privileged. But I realized when you have students and you realize the hardships that these families are going through, and oftentimes a lot of these students don't have families to support them, you know, you get humbled very quick and you start to develop an understanding of, wow, we have a lot of failures in our system. We have a lot of services that aren't being met. And quite honestly, they're not supposed to be met by our teachers. We're putting I found out that we were putting way too much stress on our teachers to have them provide all the, no, a teacher's job is to teach. They should just be educating students to give them the skills necessary to be successful in college and career. Unfortunately, we've put a lot of stressors on our educators across the state that they have to serve all these different roles, and we're not investing in, you know, enough social workers, social services that need to be involved. And so, you know, those things just kind of opened my eyes, and I got very involved in education policy after that. And so I said, hey, you know, after teaching, I realized it wasn't for me long term. And so I transitioned out because I got motivated to go do something about it. And thankfully, you know, I ended up working in state government, and that's when I ended up eventually going to work with Vince over at the Lieutenant Governor's office. And then after that, I worked for the Public Education Department and served as their legislative liaison. And our good friend, Fred Nathan,
yes,
was looking for their first ever education reform director. And I threw my name in the ring. And luckily for me, I got that job. But we got to do some amazing work. And I encourage anyone who hasn't read our education roadmap to success, take a look at that policy report. Because when I started working at Think New Mexico, Fred said, Abe, what?
So that report is available at Think New Mexico?
Think New Mexico.
Yep. .org. Okay.
Yeah. But it lays out a roadmap of what we need to look at, what investments we need to make in education, what policy changes we need to do to start seeing some return on investment, you know. And I worked for former Secretary Christopher Ruskowski at the tail end of the administration as it was starting to begin transitioning over to the Michelle Lujan Grisham administration. And one thing that he said has always stuck with me, and it is so true, and we can look at it today. He said, Abe, they're going to come in and throw a lot of money at education, but with no accountability, and you're not going to see any changes. And he called it, Jim, because you know, a lot of people believe that our education system is underfunded. It is not. It is historically overfunded. We have increased our education spending probably more than just about any state. And we also have one of the most generous state equalization guarantee funding formulas in New Mexico that's been recognized that, yeah, this is a very equal distribution of funds to our public schools. And so we've put so much money into that, Jim, yet we saw declining rates. COVID didn't help. We shut down our schools. But now we can't even recover from that. And so, you know,
Secretary Ruskowski called it. He said they're going to throw a lot of money at this, but there's not going to be any changes. And we've actually seen a decline, you know. And obviously, in education, you're not going to see overnight growth. It takes a long time to see change. What we need to do is we need to stick to something. If it's working, let's do it. And a lot of people, I had this conversation the other day on the radio with Elias Cisneros. I said, you know, someone had asked, why don't we take advice from Mississippi? And I hopped on there and I said, we don't need to take advice from Mississippi because we were already doing it.
Mm.
Governor Susana Martinez had implemented many of the reforms necessary that Mississippi just stayed course. We didn't. It was all rolled back in 2019 when Michelle Lujan Grisham became governor, and the House and Senate proposed bills that rolled back just about everything that the last administration had done. And it took us off course. And so had we stuck with a lot of those policies that were implemented, we could have potentially seen change. And people failed to realize, Jim, and I know I'm getting a little long here, but Mississippi, it took them over a decade to see those results.
Yeah, but they've moved up the list, and we've stayed at the bottom of the bad, or at the top of the bad list and the bottom of the good list, right? I'm going to address a question to Vince when we come back from this break. We got to say thank you to our sponsors. We do appreciate you very much. It allows us to have these kind of guests and talk about these issues. But Vince, I'm going to ask you about what accountability should voters be requiring for all this money that's been spent on education, homelessness, you name it, without any results. We'll be back with Vince Torres and Abe Baldonado right after these messages. Jim Williams with you today on ABQ Connect, sitting in for Steve Reibman. He'll be with you tomorrow and Friday. I appreciate you joining me. And Abe Baldonado and Vince Torres are with us. We're talking about politics in New Mexico. And Vince, right before the break, Abe was talking about education and that we're throwing a lot of money at education, but we're still ranked last in the country for education. Talk to us about what voters should do with that information.
Well, my hope would be is that the voters would demand more. I mean, we're talking about, we are spending historically more on education than we ever have before on a state. 10 years ago, we were spending about $4.6 billion a year. Now we're spending $6.8.
Wow.
We're talking about an increase of over $2 billion over the last 10 years. We're serving about 12% fewer students. I think roughly 60 school districts have their lowest enrollment that they've ever had before, or that they've had in some time. And so we're servicing fewer students, we're spending significantly more money, and the numbers are not changing whatsoever. So I think that creates a bigger question that has to be asked, that if it's not a spending problem, then where does the problem lie? And I think in that regard, voters need to be demanding more of their elected officials when it comes to changing and reforming education here in New Mexico.
Abe made an interesting point. Mississippi incorporated some things that New Mexico had already put in place, but then that was kind of put on the back burner by Michelle Lujan Grisham. So that would have been 8 years ago. And so now we have the results of that. Mississippi's moved up to 17th in the country, I think, according to Kids Count.
Yep.
And we're still 50th.
Yeah. And the difference there, to get to your point, though, it was political courage. It was political fortitude. People call it the Mississippi miracle. As a person of faith, I'll say it wasn't a miracle at all. There were actually some specific policies that were implemented there that just made sense. They talked about the science of reading, early intervention, right? Getting these kids tutors, and they ended social promotion, that if a kid wasn't proficient in reading by the time they were wrapping up third grade, they were held back, because those who have been in education like Abe know that up until third grade, you're essentially learning to read. And after third grade, you start reading to learn. So if you can't read after third grade, it significantly sets you back. And there's all sorts of data that can demonstrate just that particular pitfall, that if you're not proficient in reading by third grade, you're less likely to graduate, you're less likely to succeed in several other areas. So again, it wasn't a miracle. They just put some policies in place that were backed by data, that were backed by other things. And they had the political fortitude to stay the course, where, as Abe pointed out, here in New Mexico, we went at it for a few years, then completely reversed course. And had we stuck with it, who knows, New Mexico could be right up there with Mississippi.
Yeah.
And leadership matters. You know, I think one thing, Secretary Carrie Bright was the leader of that movement in Mississippi, and she stayed as the leader running that. And I think one thing that has hindered New Mexico is that we've had, what now, 5-6 secretaries of education. Like, that has only done a disservice, not only to our educators and our educational ecosystem, but all the way down to the parents and the direction that education is going in their child's life. You know, it just continues to switch up. And over the last 8 years, I think that has completely hurt our students across the state.
Yeah, it's baffling to me why, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans and the independents and all the other politically affiliated people in our state, all the voters, we all want the same thing for our children. Mm-hmm. We want them all to be educated. We want them to have a well-rounded experience. We want them to have some fun in school. We want them to be safe. And that doesn't seem like, to me, it's rocket science. I mean, I should mention, Vince, that you helped to fund Santa Fe Christian School. Mm-hmm. And that's a private school, and your wife steers the boat over there.
Yes, she does very well.
And Tiffany is an amazing woman, and yeah, you married up, buddy. I'm teasing you. But you guys are a good partnership there, and the school's doing well.
It is. Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, the Santa Fe Christian was born out of at least part of this conversation. It clearly was, we wanted a faith-based opportunity and option for families in Santa Fe that didn't exist at the time. But beyond that, we recognized that the academic standards were just getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. And one of the things I can attest, having a front row seat to what is happening at Santa Fe Christian, that these kids are incredibly capable. Much more capable, I think, than we give them credit for, and that we think, especially when we see some of the test scores that come in. And we've had kids that have come in through our school, and you know, they come in and they're given an assessment to kind of see where they are, and you see kids making significant strides that are off the charts. I mean, the ability for them to come in where they are, and then, you know, within a matter of 9 months, be right on track is just an incredible accomplishment. But I think that one of the things you said, Jim, and, you know, not to sour your comment, but, you know, you said everybody kind of wants the same for our children. They all want them to have access to a good education. I don't know that I believe that.
Mm.
Because the reality is that if we truly did want that, then we would be pursuing that. There would be changes. There would be differences. We're spending money. We've thrown a lot of money at it. It's not moving the system. And so it does get me to a point where, again, call me jaded, but I have to start to think if maybe the system isn't accomplishing exactly what those in power wanted to accomplish. And I think it's a legitimate question that I just have to ask, because having been now working in this sphere for 20 years and seeing no real change, and at every time when there's legitimate reform put forward where we can actually move the dial, and to see another administration come in and completely undo that, I can't say that that's by accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, I think what we need to do now is pause, take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the candidates running. I want to talk again about Deb Holland and Greg Hull and Lieutenant Governor and some of the other races that are going on. So we'll be back on ABQ Connect with Abe Baldonado and Vince Torres right after these messages. We are back with Vince Torres and Abe Baldonado. They have been with us the whole hour, and we're going to have another 12 or 13 minutes here till the top of the hour. Let me start with Vince. Vince, for someone focused on work, family, paying bills, how do congressional decisions affect daily life? Explain what the House and Senate can actually do to make changes.
Well, that's not always the case. I mean, there are oftentimes much of what happens in D.C. we don't necessarily feel it locally in a meaningful way. But the exception to that, and this is something that Abe brought up earlier, that Working Families Tax Credit Act that the Republicans and the president signed just recently, I mean, that is an area where we felt that immediately. I was reading the other day a report that was put out that on average, most taxpayers received a 10% higher tax return this year as a result of the no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, overtime, again, higher child tax credit, higher standard deduction. So it's in those decisions where you can really start to feel it, you know, rather immediately. Obviously, the other end of that is that you feel some of the impact of the decisions when it comes to our foreign policy. So when we are at war, or when we are in conflict with one of our adversaries, we tend to feel it at the gas pump. Thankfully, those prices are starting to come back down again. But there is a lot to that. And so I think the importance of who is representing us in Washington, D.C., you need someone who recognizes what the needs of New Mexicans are, someone who's not so detached from the reality of what's happening at home. And it's easy to do that. If anyone has ever visited D.C. or spent any time there, one of my experiences every time I'm there, I'll always come back, and I've had this conversation with Abe a lot, is I can kind of understand why the politicians in D.C. tend to be so detached from their home states, because it's another reality there. That is not America. That is not New Mexico. And so I think it's very important that we have folks in Washington, D.C. who recognize what's happening here in New Mexico and how they can best represent us when these sorts of things come up.
I'm going to go to Abe and ask you about, we have a U.S. Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, these are people from New Mexico that are going to represent us on the Hill. Ben Ray Lujan and Larry Marker is the Republican candidate. Ben Ray's the incumbent Democrat. U.S. House District 1, Melanie Stansberry is the incumbent. Didi, and I don't know how to say Didi's last name.
Okpareki.
Okpareki, I love that. Gabe Voskis in District 2 is the incumbent. Greg Cunningham. I will say this. Greg Cunningham is really an interesting person. To me, I just find him a very fascinating guy with a breadth of experience that I've never seen a candidate have before. And then, of course, in District 3, Teresa Ledger Fernandez is the incumbent. Martin Zamora, the Republican running against Fernandez. We have Greg Hall and we have Deb Holland running. So why don't you break down, if you would? We don't have a whole lot of time, but why don't you start with these races for the Senate and House, because these are more federal positions, mm-hmm. and tell us what we need to learn about that. And then I really want to focus on the governor's race, if we could.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Jim, CD2 is really where we need to look at. That is probably the closest race right now in our congressional elections. And so, Greg Cunningham, I'm sure you saw the recent KOB poll that came out that showed Greg within about 3 points. Most of us have believed that's probably pretty close to what we thought, you know, and I know Mark Ronchetti got on there and, you know, he's not a big fan of the way they poll, but even he agreed, like, hey, this is probably where it is. So, you know, Greg Cunningham's in striking distance. And as you mentioned, heck of a record for Greg, you know, a veteran, served in the Marine Corps, also served in law enforcement, brings a unique perspective to a lot of the issues that are keeping our communities up at night. And I think that's resonated with New Mexicans. And you know, Greg has really been out there, you know, talking to New Mexicans and also calling out Gabe Voskis' record. Gabe Voskis is not friendly to industry. Gabe Voskis, he likes political posturing. You know,
how do you tell what's true? Like, I watch Gabe Voskis commercials and it's like, I worked with Republicans to do this or that.
Vince, I mean, that's Jim, that's a great question. You got to look at the voting record. What has he actually voted on? You know, most recently last week, I saw him post that he was trying to propose a bill on stopping insider trading in Congress. Well, Congress gave him an opportunity to vote against that, in support of that. Like, let's stop insider trading in Congress. Let's stop getting rich off of, you know, sitting on these committees. He voted no against it, you know, and I understand. Again, that bill, they added an amendment to it, which also said, hey, we also need voter ID. Those are two very common sense issues.
Yes.
So why would you vote against that bill? You could argue, yeah, standalone. It doesn't matter. Those are two very common sense goals. And look, they're 80-20 issues. You know, everyone will tell you, I don't think people that we send to Congress should get rich overnight. And I also believe we should protect the integrity of our
election. And when you say an 80-20 issue, you're really saying 80% of the public support mm-hmm. this.
Right.
Can we ever get 80% of the voters to vote?
I wish.
That's tough. Yeah, that's tough. Our voter turnout, although it's been better over the last several cycles, is still, you know, much, much, much shorter of where we'd like it to be.
So, Vince, you got to call out the faith community, because I understand only half of us are registered to vote. And then when it comes to election time, November 3rd, only half of us are going to vote. That cannot happen this year.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. And I'll just do a shout out to the folks from Albuquerque that are listening in who may not understand that that second congressional district that Abe is mentioning now comes all the way up into the Albuquerque South Valley. Yeah. And so your congressional district here, Congressional District 1, is a very, very, very tough race for conservatives to win. Despite the fact that Dede is running a fantastic mm-hmm. campaign, it is very difficult for a conservative to win this Albuquerque seat. However, because of redistricting and gerrymandering, that CD2 district now comes up into the South Valley. And so you live in the South Valley. I'm just letting you know, you have an honorable man on the ballot in Greg Cunningham. You have someone who is a man of faith, who is a faithful husband, a good grandfather, again, former Marine, former retired law enforcement officer. And so if you've been angry at the status quo of New Mexico politics and maybe felt like me that you don't have a voice in Washington, D.C., to those of you living in the South Valley, you have an opportunity to change that this go around. And I really do feel with that race being as close as it is, a lot of it's going to come down to whether the South Valley of Albuquerque shows up, in particular, the people of faith that live in that district.
Absolutely. And Vince, on that, a South Valley native, Greg grew up in the South Valley. So,
yeah.
And that's so important. You're getting a guy, Gabe Vasquez never grew up in the South Valley. So,
well, I understand Gabe Vasquez is not from New Mexico.
Not
that everybody should be from New Mexico. Yeah. He's lived here a while. But I have a hard time listening to what people say in their ads and everything and knowing that it's what they're saying is not true.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to swallow.
It is. And that's why it's so critical for New Mexicans to research. And, you know, don't just take the Albuquerque Journal's word for it. Don't just take the same New Mexicans' word for it. I'm just going to call it out, Jim. We see lazy media. Legacy media has gotten very lazy. They don't give the full context of an issue, a story. So it's very important for New Mexicans to hop online and just do a quick search. If these individuals are making claims on all sides, we should always look at what claims people are making who are running for office and fact check them. We should find out, is this true?
Again, I want to emphasize, please vote.
Yeah.
A lot of people are discouraged because they think their one vote doesn't matter.
Yep. As a former civics teacher, Jim, I will tell you, I had students that told me that they felt that way. Like, hey, when I get out into the real world, I'm not going to vote because I don't believe my vote matters. No, it absolutely does. And I'm not saying that every candidate that you pick is going to win. And that's not realistic. But your vote does matter. And you have to get, and it's your duty. That's what we Americans and New Mexicans need to realize and understand, that it is your civic duty. You have a duty to do it. It is a privilege. Take full advantage of it.
And I know I'm talking to a Lobo here, but I'll just use a brief illustration that I've used for a while. That attitude is the equivalent of saying, I'm not going to show up at University Stadium because my single, you know, voice in being a fan doesn't matter.
No, you're part of the collective.
You're part of the collective. You're part of the 25,000 who showed up for football. You're part of the, you know, 18,000 that will pack the pit. And collectively, you can make a difference. Yeah. Collectively, you can make a difference. And more important than that, you showing up is demonstrating that you're there for your team, that you care about the process, that you care about the success of your team. If you sit these elections out, the message that you're sending is you don't really care about the future of New Mexico. And I'm just going to say it as it is. You know, if you are a voter who consistently does not show up and exercise this incredible responsibility and opportunity that you've been given to have a say in who governs our state, you're missing out. And this is the time to get plugged back in, because the future of our state literally hangs in the balance.
I've observed things happening in Rio Rancho for probably 15 years because I live in Corrales. And everything coming out of Rio Rancho has been amazing, in my view. I'm not going to tell people how to vote, but their former mayor, Greg Hull, now candidate for governor, he knows about homelessness and what to do, how to help people, how to get people off the street. He knows about education. The Rio Rancho schools are some of the highest ranked in the state. Obviously, the state needs better. He knows about organization. He knows about flood control. He knows about all these different things. Is that experience Deb Haaland has, in your opinion, Abe?
No. Quite honestly, no. I think... has she held some big roles? Absolutely. You know, but she's been a political insider outside of serving as Congresswoman for a short stint and then Secretary of Interior. I don't know if that's enough credibility. I mean, if you go through and look at Deb Haaland testifying in front of congressional committees, she delegates everything to staff. She doesn't answer any questions directly. And I think that that's a big red flag, you know, because I'm not telling you you have to know everything, obviously, but as someone who's steering the ship for these agencies, you should at least have some fundamental understanding of how your agency works and operates and some of the big questions. And also, you should be prepared for a committee hearing when you're going to be asked questions by congressional members.
She has also avoided, intentionally, in my opinion, debating with Greg Hull. They're scheduled right now for October 8th. I hope that actually happens. How important is it for people to listen to that?
I think it's important just to have an opportunity to hear directly from the candidates. Again, you can go to websites, you can look at, you know, platforms, you can look at documents, you can look at all these different things that have been populated by staff and others. But I think the ability to hear directly from them is very, very important. And so, assuming the debate does happen, I would encourage everybody to tune in. I hope the moderators do a good job of actually asking tough questions and informative questions rather than just throwing both candidates softballs, because New Mexico has no shortage of problems that we have to address. Yeah. And the next governor needs to be prepared, because we're walking in the thick of it right now. We're flush with cash, so money's not a problem, but how to actually appropriate those resources in a way that we actually start to get the state back on track, that is the big question.
You know, it's interesting that you say that the table's been set, and somebody that takes Michelle Lujan Grisham's seat as the governor actually has a nice slate to work with, don't they?
Mm-hmm. When it comes to funding, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
money is not going to be the problem. We have plenty of money in the coffers. We're flush with cash. But how you actually utilize, again, those resources and stored them well to get the desired outcome that we all want, that's another question.
If you didn't hear this whole interview, you can pick it up on abqconnect.online. Abe Baldonado and Vince Torres with us today talking about New Mexico politics. Gentlemen, very grateful for you to be here today.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you, Jim.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on 8-